All right. You are listening to The Real World, broadcasting from the unceded territory of the Musqueam people at the University of British Columbia. We are Film Society's radio show. For those of you who don't know, we are on every Wednesday, I know the day of the week, from 4 to 5. And normally we have some upcoming events to announce, but we got nothing. We got nothing cooking this week. It is just radio. So we hope you guys enjoy our little radio show. As per last week, some of you may remember, all of our loyal listeners, I'm sure, have tuned in. They're masses of fans. Remember, very special guest.
Hold on there. Oh, there's Mike.
There we go.
I'm here. It's Matthew. I'm back for another round. They couldn't keep me out of here. Yeah. I know the code to the door.
Locked the studio. They got in.
Mm-hmm.
Fucked up. But yeah, this week we're going to be talking about a very special Canadian icon, Ryan Gosling, who...
Truly, I mean, well, I think that the... When you look about, like, when you think about, like, male Canadian actors, that's a very specific field, I suppose. Yeah. But I feel like the two you think of are Ryan Reynolds, Ryan Gosling, the two Ryans,
They got a monopoly on the industry. It's crazy.
I'm saying they need to change up the first names.
Yeah.
I'm saying, hey, Canadian mothers, don't go for Ryan. We have too many of those.
You ban Ryan as like first Canadian name.
That's what I'm saying, actually. And that's really what we're here to talk about today. Yeah. Well, not actually. We're here to talk about maybe Ryan Gosling as a person.
Yeah.
As an actor.
Entity, as an icon.
Yeah.
The man, the myth, the legend. But as per usual, we got some ads. We got some PSAs. So we'll be back but a minute or two. See you guys soon.
Join New Brunswick punk rockers Motherhood with special guests Montreal's Samoy and Vancouver's Space Crash Echoes June 11th at Green Auto. To get your tickets and learn more, visit at Green Auto Music on Instagram and click the link in bio.
I love that my volunteer role helps create meaningful experience for the Scouts, and at the same time, I'm improving my organizational abilities while ensuring camp, events, and meeting run smoothly, all while giving back to the kids and making their experience better.
Take our online quiz and find your perfect volunteer role. Adventure awaits. Join us at scouts.ca/volunteer.
Picture this. You're walking into your local record store and start skimming the many records until you find an album that you recognize. You pick out the album, check the track list, and maybe only recognize a couple songs. Now you have to listen to the whole album, right? Well, why not do it together? On Discali, every show runs you through an entire album and breaks down key parts and songs that make up an album's aesthetic, art, and story. I'm your host, Oliver, and join me every Friday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m. in talking about all things music. Want to discover more albums, artists, record pressings, and concerts? I got you. That's every Friday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., so tune in to Discali to discover different discographies and add to the musical discourse.
Leading Outdoor Adventures helps me stay physically active and engaged. Every hike, every camp, every trek, I'm reminded of how much I grow as a leader and how the challenges make me better, all while giving the Scouts a memorable experience.
Take our online quiz and find your perfect volunteer role. Adventure awaits. Join us at scouts.ca/volunteer.
All right. So as mentioned before, we're going to be talking about Ryan Gosling, who... He's had a bit of a wild career. So, like, before this episode intensive, what was your, like, how did Ryan Gosling exist in your mind?
Ryan Gosling, I think, honestly, I'm going to be so honest, for a long time, and really this was honestly the case before Because to be frank, I hadn't really seen anything with Ryan Gosling in it until the Barbie movie. And then I was like, oh, he's great. And everyone's talking about how great of a like actor he is and like all this stuff. Right. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, you know, I checked out more of his stuff. And I think for like before then, he'd really always only existed in my mind as like the other Ryan from Canada, because Ryan Reynolds went to my high school.
Damn.
And like to the, it's wild, like to the point where it's like he, like the grad class after me, which was the COVID grad, where like they got, you know, ruined by, they didn't get like a prom or anything. He bought them all, like he paid for them all to get a gift card to a local pizza place for like one whole like medium large pizza or something.
Pizza on Ryan, that's crazy.
It genuinely, he like sent like a video in to the school and everything. And I, so like my life growing up in Vancouver has been dominated by Ryan Reynolds fans. And I think it's so funny knowing you, because, you know, My partner, she's from Burlington, and that's Ryan Reynolds, I believe, went to school there, I believe, is where he went to, I can't remember which, if it was like primary or high school, but he went to...
Ryan Gosling's very big Ontario guy.
Yeah, big Ontario, London, Ontario, you know, he's been around. But I can imagine that growing up in Ontario, from my understanding, he kind of plays a similar role for the Ontario heads out there.
It's just like a bit of a local, like... Like, whatever the antithesis of a cryptid is what I feel like.
Yeah, well, you could call him a local legend, but I think maybe that's a little too... I think we're being a little too kind. not that he doesn't deserve that, I suppose. But, yeah, I mean, I really had very little understanding or very little knowledge of his filmography, and I think this episode was shocking to me, especially as someone who had, before we planned this episode, only seen... the Barbie movie and Blade Runner.
Crazy. That's crazy. Because, like, what did I see? I think I'd only seen, like, La La Land and Drive. Like, classic. Also, like, big Ryan Gosling hits.
I did not see La La Land. And one day, maybe I will. But I think, like, I just, like, I'm very particular. Hey, La La Land's... I'm about to show my ignorance here. It's a musical, correct?
It is.
Surely. I was going to say, surely the movie called La La Land is a musical.
Dead face the whole time.
Yeah,
it's just... neo-noir thriller.
Yeah, it's neo-noir. Yeah, exactly. Ryan Gosling is in black and white. Everyone else is in color. but yeah, like my... Like, I'm so picky about musicals, so La La Land is going to have to be like a real... I sit down and like get myself to watch it. You know what I mean? But, you know, definitely wasn't the case for a couple of these movies. I was very surprised at his dramatic repertoire.
Yeah. I honestly, like, going into this, I saw Blue Valentine. I'm like, oh, that's a rom-com. That looks like a rom-com.
Yeah, we looked at the list of, we looked at his filmography, and we were deciding between, what was it, The Nice Guys or Blue Valentine.
And we're like, let's only go with one funny. Let's be a bit more dramatic.
Literally, I was like, yeah, let's go for the, like, let's go for the romance. Yeah. Like, we really should have checked the genre tags on that one.
Oh, my God.
But I really did just read the name Blue Valentine and said, all right, he's going to be... You know, I think about him in The Notebook. I think about him in, you know, I feel like he's such a for the girlies rom-com guy.
Like, even like, apparently I haven't seen Lars and the Real Girl, but I know that's kind of he's like, he's rom-com-y in that, you know?
I feel like he's very much the quintessential, like, I feel like he's one of the quintessential Hollywood heartthrobs.
Yeah.
In that, like, for the straight girlies out there. And so I feel like I was very shocked to watch these movies and see. I also didn't know he did Disney.
Yeah, no, honestly, like, going into this, I was vaguely aware of that in the back of my mind. But then, like, watching him just, like, eat up these dramatic roles, I was like, damn, like, this guy was kicking it with Mickey Mouse.
That's
like,
what I'm saying.
5 years prior.
Yeah, I'm like, this guy was kicking it with Mickey Mouse and then did The Believer.
Yeah.
Which is a crazy switch up.
Wildly, he was also, like, 21 doing that.
Which,
like,
is insane. That's so young. That's 2 years younger than me.
Fucked up.
I'm like... old as hell compared to how he was when he was doing The Believer. And I'm like... It's over for me. I'm crusty.
It's like watching, like, when you watch, like, the Olympics or something, they have to, like, skateboarding, and it's just, like, 12-year-old kids doing, like, triple kickflips on the side of the dome.
Some dude who got taken out of middle school for this. It's like, this guy's got a quiz today, but, like,
he's missing trigonometry for this.
Trigonometry. This guy's learning, like, pre-algebra. This guy is, like...
Exactly.
But, yeah, so I don't know if you had any other thoughts about... I don't know what your, you know, kind of impression of Ryan Gosling as an actor was before maybe getting into this.
I feel like in my mind, he's always existed in this space where it's like I'm vaguely like parasocial for him the same way I am for like Iowa Debra and like Rachel Sennett and like
real.
But like he's not like someone I'm like, oh my god, like he's so hot. He is so hot. But like in my mind, he just exists as like a family friend that's like, oh, he's gonna send me money on my birthday once every 4 years, probably miss the day by like a week or two, but I'll be like, ah, that's Ryan.
No, and that's what I'm saying. I'm like, he very much gives like he kind of gives like awesome uncle energy a little bit. Like he's kind of giving awesome unk power. And like, I kind of like, I totally agree with you where it's like, I mean, he's not my cup of tea, but I can see how he is. But like in the way that it's like my uncle pulls, but I don't really get it because he's like, I see him three shots in at the family gathering, right? And that's the kind of vibe that Ryan Gosling gives off.
This guy's like putting sunglasses on the family dog, laughing his ass off.
Oh,
like, that's it. That's
oh, I'm picturing it. Oh, I'm absolutely picturing it. And that's so true.
But I honestly like, before this, I'd only really seen Ryan Gosling in like a series of like periphery roles. Like I wasn't seeking anything out for the gods, you know?
Yeah.
Then like actually going in like with like Ryan Gosling goggles on, it was like kind of crazy. Like, how this guy, like, it feels like people talk a lot about sort of, like, nuanced, like, pulled back acting and, like, hold up a lot of, like, Robert De Niro and, like, that sort of type. But, like, I feel like Ryan Gosling is kind of, like, how we can oscillate between, like, just so crazy over the top and really, like, dramatic and, like, pulled back performances is so impressive, honestly.
Yeah, he's got the real, you know, he's got the simmer cooking.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's this, it's, like, it's a specific way that, you know, I noticed it in Blue Valentine and in The Believer. And honestly, in Blade Runner as well, that like when he flips from that kind of, like you said, he has those really high energy, big, he's good at that like explosive, very like dramatic energy. But then he's got this very specific like like, and this is what people say, like this is what people say online when they be like, he just like me for real. It's that like specific look he has when he's portraying a more subtle like intensity that he, I know, you know, he has this, he has like, that like way that his eyes kind of droop and he does this like, he'll kind of like, sometimes he'll do like the kind of like head tilt down, the like look up.
Beautiful.
The like, and I get why people are thirsting for him. Like, I not personally, but I get it when I see like that is like his go-to dramatic look.
I'm gonna be, it got me like halfway through Blade Runner. I think it was also like,
he does it so much in Blade Runner. He does it so much in Blade Runner.
He pulled that like the third time. I was like, okay, like, hey Ryan, like maybe I get it. Like, okay.
Hey, all right. Why are you looking at me like that? And I think like, I mean, I didn't know where you wanted to start. I mean, of course, we could, you know, just a quick honorable mention to things like, you know, where, you know, I think most people maybe know him from, which is roles like Barbie Movie and The Notebook. The Notebook, like such a like absolute romance classic, like love The Notebook. But yeah, I feel like those two are like, those are like the two big ones. And I think Blade Runner is kind of behind those two, but still a big movie in terms of recognition for him.
Like, I feel like the only thing for like Blade Runner is it's so many other stars that it isn't really functioning as like Ryan Gosling vessel, whereas like Barbie and like The Notebook, like Barbie has like Margot Robbie obviously, but it is like Barbie and Ken, like they're both kind of holding that space. And then,
absolutely,
like, The Notebook, like I haven't seen it, but I do just think Ryan Gosling, like when I see him on screen, like I'm like, oh yeah.
No, 100%. And I think that like, obviously when we look at when we talk about like Barbie and Notebook, like Barbie and The Notebook, it's like, obviously like they are pretty, like the cast overall is very good. But I think like those are two like standout moments for him. And I think if we're going to go kind of backwards in time, from kind of that most recognizable to like more niche his stuff that he did in the past, Blade Runner 2049. Now, have you seen the original?
I had a crazy day where I had like a whole afternoon. I'm like, fuck it, 5 hours Blade Runner. So I watched the original and then immediately followed it with 2049.
Beautiful. See, I did the opposite in that I've never seen the original.
I was like, I was about to go into 2049, did one quick search. I'm like, hey, should I watch Blade Runner before? Saw the Reddit thing where they're all, yes, yes, yes. I'm like, fuck it, okay, hour and a half. What's going on in that one?
So, yeah, I'll be so for real with you. I watched, and I've told you this, but just for, you know, posterior for the listeners at home, I watched Blade Runner. So I was under the impression that, and I think I'd combined Blade Runner 2049 with some other adaptation. I think I'd confused it with Ghost in the Shell, which Ghost in the Shell is a remake, is like a, yeah, is kind of like a westernization. It's, yeah, not a like sequel. I didn't know that Blade Runner 2049 was a sequel to anything.
Me neither.
I went into it fully assuming, like in my head, because I watched it on a plane, so I didn't have Wi-Fi to like look this up. Yeah, so like I just said, oh, Blade Runner 2049, that's the one where it's the, you know, it's the, you look lonely, I can, I was like, that's the one where he does the thing, and it's, he's just like me for real. Like that's the, you know, that's the meme scene. So I just popped it on, and the, let me tell you, watching that movie for the first like 30 minutes, assuming it was a standalone film, was a trip.
That would have been so confusing. Like,
I just was really like, wow, it's so avant-garde. It's so like cerebral. They're just, wow, they're really trusting the audience to just kind of know a lot going in, like to just like, you know, be along for the ride. I think, honestly, I thought it was a more profound movie, thinking that it was intentionally kind of vague.
I feel like it honestly works better that way, because like, mm-hmm, the original Blade Runner, I honestly thought I dozed off halfway through, because like I watched it, by the end of it, no idea what was happening. Like, Harrison Ford's there, I guess. I'm not sure. There's an origami unicorn. Sure, mm-hmm, man. But like the, like Blade Runner 2049 just kind of took whatever like fun looking mess Ridley Scott had and like not even condensed it, like stretched it out. Because like,
yeah, I was about to say condensed. Where, like, yeah, this is a long movie. What is it?
Extrapolated.
2.5 like, hours?
I think it's 2.45.
2.45, like, Jesus.
It's just like a brutalist.
Hey, I'm going to be real. No movie needs to be that long. No. I'm going to say it. I'll say it. You know, having seen a number of like 3-hour long movies recently, love them on a plane, they don't need to be that long. Yeah. I'm only cool with them being that long because they're on a plane.
Yeah. I did start losing my mind halfway through, because it was like, you know, I had the popcorn already and like I was done it by like hour and a half mark. And I'm like, surely there can't be much longer left. No. Yeah. It's an hour and a half left.
Well, it's like, it feels like they spend, okay, I feel like Blade Runner 2049, and like I gotta give credit where credit is due. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, he, if we're going to keep this mostly, you know, obviously there's a great, there's like such talent in these casts, oh, yeah, for all these movies. But if we're going to focus on Ryan Gosling as like an actor, as a through line for this episode, his performance in 2049, like I think it was so, I almost feel like it was his quintessential dramatic role, yeah, not in the sense that it was the most like profound, mm-hmm, but in the sense that I think it played so distinctly to his strengths,
yeah,
in that he got to hit that smolder so many times. And that was like the whole concept of like this character as someone, you know, as like the replicas, as like these kind of like, you know, soulless, right? This, yeah, this concept and that struggle to like feel humanity and come to grips with that, and like search for that feeling, was like the perfect vessel to just let him do that smolder for almost the entire movie.
Absolutely. Like, I think for Ryan Gosling, this role very much functions the same as like Drive.
Yes,
and that he,
absolutely,
just gets to stand around, kind of not say much every now and again, just like look up at the camera.
Yeah. and I think that he's, and you know, I'm glad that he got to explore more, you know, comedic roles, yeah, like, you know, The Nice Guys, you know, even The Notebook to an extent, right? A more, yeah, lighthearted role.
Like Barbie.
Like, quintessential, right? Like, and I think that it's just, like, it's so fun to see the range of, yeah, like, I feel like this was just, like, it was almost an exaggerated drama.
Yeah.
In the way he acted this character, and that it was, like, I don't know. I think the movie teetered on needing to be aware of how overly serious, yeah, and grimdark it was being.
Like, it did almost like fall into like pastiche moments. Like, you're sitting there like, okay.
Genuinely, yeah. Like, oh my God, I get it. It's, oh my, like, okay. And now I guess, oh my gosh, like, how dystopian can we possibly make a future, yeah, and not it feel, yeah, like a little gauche at a certain, yeah, point. I was like, and there's like the children working in the electronics,
yeah,
like, you know, assembly line. And again, this is also coming from someone who's not seen the original, so, mm-hmm, to be super clear, you know, I am operating off. I never went back and watched the original, because to be honest, I thought it was funnier if I talked about this movie having never seen the first one.
Honestly, the first one is just like a fever dream of a movie. Like,
yeah.
I watched the whole thing. I was like, I feel like I missed half of this. And there's like 15 different cuts floating around. It's just like, the whole thing is just like, honestly, skim the Wikipedia. Like,
yeah, it feels very, like, from my understanding, like looking a little bit into it afterwards, it feels very much like it's one of those movies that's like so cult popular, but not really, like, you wouldn't, unless you're into that kind of thing, you're not going to have fun watching
it. Yeah. No, this is like, for me, this is not like a cult classic in the way that like Fight Club is a cult classic.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, it went underappreciated originally. But you can kind of, it's fairly approachable. Like, you can go in and watch it and be like, yeah, this is
You can watch Fight Club. Yeah, Fight Club's an easy movie. Like, I would even say, like, you know, and we're going to talk about, you know, maybe some cult stuff next week. But, you know, to spoiler, but like The Room, you know, as an example of like a, even like cult doesn't necessarily have to be like good, right? Like underappreciated. It's like, well, it can still have value on a watch. It can still be fun to watch. But like, I definitely got the impression that this was like a really, and I love the word cerebral in this context, because I think it fits very well.
Oh, yeah.
That like, unless you're into that, you're not going to rock with that movie.
Absolutely. Like, this is the sort of movie that's like, it's so fun. Like, if you just had on like the background at a party or something like that, because it looks pretty.
Oh, God.
Like,
yeah.
Feel like
you're
watching, you're like, hell yeah. And then like at a certain point, it's like the dialogue just becomes incomprehensible. And you're like, all right.
Well, I feel like that's the kind of movie that maybe you, throw into the back of a party. It's pretty. Do not want someone to sit down watching that.
Oh, yeah.
That's absolutely, if someone is high, they're not gonna have a good time if they sit down and watch that.
Bad trip.
No.
I feel, but the thing with kind of like what you're talking about earlier, but like how like gauche this film kind of is, I find it so interesting that they still manage to somehow work in the dead wife trope when his wife is just like Alexa.
Yeah,
like,
I was gonna say, it was so funny how like, I'm gonna be honest, like I for like a week after watching that movie was making like, like, I could not stop thinking about my, like, ChatGPT AI girlfriend. Like, I was like, I could not stop thinking about, Ryan Gosling's, like, incel ChatGPT arc. Yeah. Like, you know, like, my AI girlfriend app. And I just couldn't stop. Like, when did, I wish I had it on me, but when did do you remember when 2049 came out?
2017.
So, well, I knew it was well before AI, you know, kind of hit the mainstream. But, I mean, 2017 is like well before, I honestly had it pegged even a little later, but like,
I feel like it's either 2017 or 2019, but 2019 feels way too late.
It's so funny how like sci-fi, even going so far back, right, like even like older sci-fi predicts the like, like absolutely prophetically predicted like the rise in like use of AI bots as companionship tools,
which is honestly, it's like, God, are we that predictable?
Yeah, I'm like, man, one day I want, like, listen, I would love for the sci-fi movies to get something wrong other than how advanced we are.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'd love for them to be like, oh, and this thing will really suck, and you're like, we'll do this, and then we prove it wrong, rather than like, I guess we don't have like flying cars or teleportation or something, like, but we're still doing AI girlfriend.
No, literally. Like, it's honestly, like, it's so depressing to watch like Back to the Future 2 and be like, where are my hoverboards?
Where are my
like,
hoverboards? Where are the cool things that we were promised? Why is it just dystopian? No, no. I think like the biggest thing to me is like is like, I like I just like, I see why, and I think it's unfortunate because I don't honestly think that this movie really has any, it's not like the Joker movie where you can look at it and see how maybe it was an irresponsible film in that it was a critique of the kind of incel archetype, but did it in a way that's like read on face value glorified it.
Yeah,
I think it's so interesting how this movie so clearly is not glorifying it.
Yeah,
but it's been kind of taken up with such a under such a banner of like, again, the he just like me for real, like Drive and Blade Runner being really the like the poster children movies for like that kind of, again, that scene of him looking at the holographic, you know.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I don't remember the bot's name.
Like Joy, I think?
Joy. Yeah. Joy with an I. And I remember that like massive hologram scene, and I remember like, I'm gonna be honest, I like pointed and like, whoa, that's the scene. And I was like on the plane and there were people around me. But I, you know, I just think about that one scene and how it's been so like overused online as like a, oh, he's just like me, like, oh, you know, me when the, and I feel like it's so interesting how like Ryan Gosling as an actor, specifically in some of his movies, gets put up as such this like male aspirational icon for communities that like he really has nothing to do with whatsoever.
Yeah.
You know? And I do think that's very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Like, it's so weird how he kind of functions as that figure when he's just like, it just feels like he's some guy.
He's just
like,
some guy.
Been elevated to this crazy status. You know, yeah.
Totally. Right. It's like that cult following almost of people that are like, God, I wish I was just like him.
Yeah.
When it's like, it's so weird because like I look at him and I'm like, this is just like a dude.
Yeah.
This is just like he's so just a dude. And maybe that's what's appealing about him at the end of the day is that he is kind of just a dude. You know, yeah. I was reading some stuff about him. He talks about like struggling with ADHD and stuff like that growing up. And I'm like, man, maybe he is just like me for real.
Yeah. It's like, I feel he's almost like someone like he's so generic. You can almost like project onto him in
totally.
A way you can't with like some other like just like me for real. Like you cannot like feasibly be like, yeah, I'm like Brad Pitt. It's like, okay.
No, absolutely
that's Brad
not.
Pitt. Like,
yeah, it's like that's Brad Pitt. Or like even like I would even say to compare him to the other Ryan in the room, like you can't really be like he just like me for real with like Ryan Reynolds. Because
yeah.
Ryan Reynolds and like these a lot of these actors are like such massive personalities. Mm-hmm. And while I feel like Ryan Gosling, from everything I've seen from him in like interviews and stuff, he's kind of like you said, he's just a guy. He seems nice.
Yeah.
He seems like, you know, he likes to have fun. Yeah. But like that's literally like, it's kind of like a I love to go for long walks on the beach ass like profile.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
giving him right here. Like
he's just kind of like the saltine cracker of like the male actor world.
Yeah, and I'm
like,
still
yeah.
going to eat him.
Yeah. Like, sometimes all you want is a ginger ale and a saltine cracker.
Uh-huh.
And that's present in the form of Ryan Gosling, I think.
Exactly. I don't know if you had any more other thoughts on Blade Runner, but
I think, like, even just from, like, an artistic perspective, like, I think, you know, other Canadian, Denis, I don't even know. I looked up how to pronounce his last name when we did the Dune episode, and it's gone from my mind. So, first name basis only. Me and Danae type like
me
that.
Me and Danae, homies. Yeah. Shout
I
out.
I think he's got such like a visual sense for sci-fi. Like I can totally see why they tapped him to do like Dune and why he has been like crushing it. Because like I was watching some of this and it felt very reminiscent of like Dune Part 2 and stuff like that. Like, okay, these grand like sweeping city shots and like
yeah,
very
totally.
Like intentional color usage.
He knows how to like, again, contrasting it with Dune, that's a really good point. I think like he knows how to do these big, wide, he knows how to make you feel small in a sci-fi setting. And Dune is another movie where it's like, that's the perfect setting. Like that's what you want. You need, for Dune to function, you need the audience to feel like the setting is impossibly grand. And not grand necessarily in the sense of like majestic, but like grand in like size and scale. And I think that like really like the city design like Blade Runner and like even like, oh my gosh, when he goes to kind of the, and I'm sure this location is plot relevant to the first Blade Runner, when he goes and meets Harrison Ford, and that's all I'm going to describe it as. When he goes to like Harrison Ford and like that complex and that like those massive statues, like it's so, the movie's so good at making, like you said, like the art direction just so good at making it like capturing that like dystopian sci-fi feel where things feel futuristic, but also in a kind of despairing, you know, raging against the tide kind of way.
It's like, it reminds me of like when people are talking about, like, oh, how are we going to like warn like future civilizations against like nuclear like test sites or whatever they've suggested, like, oh, these big spikes coming out of the ground or whatever.
Totally.
It's like,
oh, so reminiscent.
The very like, looking in the face of the void sort of sense of like, whoa, I'm a tiny little ant.
Oh my gosh, yeah. Like the, and like the, like exactly like you said, like the big spikes in the ground. Like I feel like that's very reminiscent of like the massive statues and the massive like figures sticking out of the ground. It's almost like you get that sense of like this was not, you know, and I think that like that visual language permeates the entire film. Like that whole idea of like, although I do want to ask, and I think some people have very different opinions on this, their use of product placement in 2049, if you're Coca-Cola or you're Pepsi or you're, you know, whatever, you're Atari, right? I'm thinking about all the brands I saw watching this movie. Do you, what goes through a brand or like a marketing executive's mind when they say, oh, we gotta put our name in the dystopian future film?
It's like, just make a TikTok or something. Like, I don't know.
Well, I'm very much like, I don't know what your thought is on that, but I always found it so funny that like they paid probably so much money to have a massive billboard of like Pepsi.
Yeah.
You know, in the middle of Blade Runner 2049, like in the middle, like on a building in this dreary, dystopian, horrid landscape.
Yeah.
And you have this massive neon like soda sign. what is going on in the minds of the like marketing executive that makes that decision?
Because it feels so like counterproductive. It's like, I'm not looking at that and be like, I could go for a crisp Pepsi right now. I'm just like, damn, like he just lost his robo wife.
They've got his robo wife, robo AI wife,
right behind him.
Uh huh. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like he, yeah, well, maybe if they had Ryan Gosling, maybe if they had him like pop a crisp Coca-Cola, like pop the bottle, you know, after exactly. his robo AI wife died, maybe I'd get that, maybe a positive like, association, yeah, you know? Maybe if that's how he coped,
yeah,
maybe if instead of coming home and he poured himself alcohol, he poured himself a crisp Diet Pepsi,
exactly,
I would be far more inclined.
Like, he's knocking it back the whole movie,
like. Uh-huh. See, that's kind of more what I want to see. I want to see like Blade Runner 3049, and I want to see like whatever. I want to see like old Timothy Chalamet or something, like, you know, Timothy Chalamet at like 50 or something as the Ryan Gosling-esque character. And I want to see him with a bottle of Coca-Cola in one hand and like an iPhone 30 in the other hand. And I want them to be facing the camera the entire time.
Exactly.
It's kind of what I'm hoping for.
And not explained at all. Like, no. He's just like entirely there. I think that's the move for product placement going forward. Mm. I think it's beautiful.
That's another point real quick before we move on is this is so nitpicky, but I'm like, I don't understand how we're in this dystopian future where like everyone's starving. Everyone's like scrounging for scraps and Coca-Cola is still like a marketable brand. I'm like, who's buying Coca-Cola?
Like, especially on like Earth or whatever, because they're like, oh yeah, this is like where the people who couldn't get off world go. So this is just like the people who are like doing the most to just survive.
These are the stragglers.
Like, I could go for a cherry Coke right now.
Genuinely, I'm like, as I think about that, you know, the appraiser, like the guy who did the appraisal for him of the wooden horse, right? And being like, oh, this is like real wood. Like I could get you so many things. I could get you off world, I could get you this. And I'm like, how broke are people that this piece of wood is so rare and so, like, I don't know. I think I sometimes get into the economy of the movie a little bit and I go like, who's buying Coca?
Yeah.
Is Coca-Cola an arms dealer in this? Like, are they manufacturing ballistic missiles in this timeline? Like, what is... To be fair, actually, I don't know. Maybe they are right now.
I feel like,
maybe they are already. Who's to say?
Possible for the Blade Runner universe.
Mm-hmm.
Got like, he should have like co-branded gun or something like that. God.
Yeah. Well, before we move on, I just want to ask, Emma, would you have Joy AI Robo ChatGPT girlfriend? Be honest.
Ooh, I feel like.
But like, if it was the one, if it was in the way that he has it in that movie,
I feel like the one thing that like weirded me out was like knowing that it's owned by like the big corporations. Like, oh, this isn't something I built with my own two hands. It's like this is me like talking to Siri and being like, Siri, do you love me?
And Siri goes, yes. Yeah. So you would feel better. So you would feel good having AI girlfriend if you programmed her yourself.
I think I think I've got to like
lock DIY
in and learn like. I don't even know, coding or something.
Yeah,
so clearly
totally.
I have a long way to go, but I think I can get there. And then maybe I'll feel good with like my probably like janky as hell like AI girlfriend that I've made myself.
Totally, like putting in the code like if depressed question, then say like, you know, tell me I'm loved, you know?
Exactly.
Hey, and that's what I'm... And that's really what we're hoping
for. Like a magic eight ball as a girlfriend as well.
Oh, that's really good. That's really good. My magic eight ball partner. That's really, really good.
How about you? Do you think you'd go for the ChatGPT girlfriend?
No, you know, personally, I think that, you know, and maybe I have standards, but, call me crazy. But I'd love to be pushed back on if I say something disagreeable.
Yeah.
And I don't think AI girlfriend's gonna do that.
No.
So
she enables like Ryan Gosling's delusion.
She enables him.
She's like, I told you were special. And then he's entirely not.
Yeah, he's entirely not. It's totally lies. And it's so
that was crazy. I did gasp at the screen when they were like, oh yeah, no, it was a girl. Like for a second,
Oh my god, wait.
Is he trans? Like, is this like the twist? My mind immediately
what a crazy,
went there.
Hey, shout out for Pride Month. I thought Ryan Gosling may have been trans in Blade Runner 2049.
Exactly. When
way better ending. Movie. I want the alternate cut of this movie.
Literally, release the director's cut. I know you were cooking it today.
I know. But no. So personally, I wouldn't. And you know, no shame to anyone. Actually, no. Full shame to people who have AI partner, ChatGPT partner.
If you tell me you have a ChatGPT girlfriend.
Yikes.
That's grounds for cutting off.
Speaking of healthy relationships. Yeah.
Speaking of girlfriend.
Speaking of girlfriend, Blue Valentine.
Not the rom-com I thought it was.
No.
I entirely like called my dad like before I was going to watch. He's like, oh, what are you up to? I'm like, I'm going to watch this rom-com, Blue Valentine. And he's like, that's not a rom-com. That's not a rom-com.
No, it was not. I think it's really funny, again, how we went into this being like, oh, we got to have one funny one or one lighthearted one. And then they were all serious.
Just like, I think we've pulled like his three most serious roles. And we're like, hell yeah. Like,
genuinely, yeah.
I think we finished this off with like Drive or something like that. It was the only way we could just fully complete the Ryan Gosling like dark universe.
No, and I mean, 100%. And I mean, like, okay, so like, what were your thoughts of Blue Valentine? Because I'm gonna be honest, I was not in a mental headspace or mentally prepared whatsoever to watch this movie, and it like actually killed me a little bit.
It was devastating. Like, actually devastating. I was going in and being like, oh my god, this is gonna be so silly fun, and then it's just like, this is not silly fun, and Ryan Gosling is balding. And it was like, oh
yeah, Ryan Gosling is balding. Well, the biggest jump scare of the movie, Gosling is balding. But yeah, I thought it was wild to see kind of this, because again, I think he's such this, you know, Hollywood rom-com heartthrob nowadays, like especially nowadays. I think specifically I'm going to, you know, when I say that, I may be going to say like kind of in current consciousness, that's what he's known for. It's like, again, Notebook, Barbie. And like those are, I would say, his two biggest roles other than maybe Blade Runner. But
like,
I think
no
that
one, like if you say like Ryan Gosling, no one's immediately like, oh yeah, Blue Velvet.
No, or Blue Valentine. Blue Valentine. Blue Velvet.
If they say Blue Velvet, they're way off base.
Blue Velvet, also a wild movie. But Blue Valentine, it's so weird juxtaposing this and The Believer and seeing Ryan Gosling in do like these absolutely hateable roles.
Yeah.
Like these absolutely heart-wrenching, right? Like, and I think maybe it's that pipeline of Disney Channel actor to taking on the most extreme roles you can once you're no longer under Disney contract.
Yeah.
And then averaging back out to maybe kind of more like, you know, maybe I can do more fun stuff. I don't need to prove myself anymore.
Like, he's definitely landed somewhere in the middle now. But so much of his early work was just him being like, I am, you know, dramatic as hell.
Yeah, I'm like a drunk deadbeat. Yeah. Like, oh my god. I actually like vomit-worthy performance on his end. Like, I was actually sickened by the plot of this movie.
Crazy.
I wish I had more funny things to I think it'd be a tone deaf of me to have funny things to say about the next two movies.
Yeah.
So if I make a joke, I think I'm gonna have to angle it towards Ryan Gosling as an actor.
Yeah.
Because the content of Blue Valentine, like the way it follows through like this broken my god.
It felt like, have you ever seen like American Honey or anything?
I have, yes.
It felt like a very similar sort of like Americana in that way, where you're just like stuck in this like perennial like summer, it feels like, of just like, I don't know, like, you know, all these like dreams that never happen, but you're stuck in this life that you don't really want to be living, and no one's really happy, but they're kind of pretending they are, and it's just like, it just like this slow death is like, ugh.
Yeah, literally like this slow heat death of this, like literally it's like the slow heat death of this relationship that, and I think it's funny because like honestly, I think that that's like a fear a lot of people have is ending up in that kind of position. And it's the thing a lot of people live. And you really hit the nail on the head in that like idea, that like very Americana aesthetic and vibe of, you know, this life that no one's really happy with, but everyone's kind of pretending to be. And well, first of all, very funny that the Canadian actor is the one doing the Americana vibe movie, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
Very funny. But like, I also think that like, you know, I think that's interesting about the movie is that it also, when it flashes back to the early parts of their relationship, it's never good. It's never good.
No.
Like, it has never been good. It was born in strife.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think the solace I could take from that movie, because honestly, like that has been like a huge fear of mine personally in my life is, you know, ending up in a situation that's not, you know, that isn't healthy and getting, you know, like stuck in that. And I think the biggest thing, honestly, that was like, honestly relieving about the movie is that it you can look at it and see it was never good. Yeah. You can look at it and see that, like, their relationship started out with this turmoil and, you know, like, there was never, like, there were good parts, obviously, yeah. but it's like, you know, you can clearly see that, you know, you can clearly see how it evolves into what you see
yeah.
in the present day. And I think that that's the solace you can take from it, is that you can look mm-hmm. at that and just, like, maybe take comfort in, like, the, okay, maybe I'll just, I would be able to recognize this maybe if yeah. it were happening to me.
Yeah.
And I think that that's.
Like, yeah. There's, like, so much, like, bubbling under the surface from, like, the time they first meet.
Oh, my gosh.
This is
yeah.
not, like, sustainable in the long term. And it's, like, maybe without the child, they would have, like, dated for a few years, then fizzled out or whatever.
Totally. Oh, my gosh.
Probably would have been more sustainable and, like, more realistic for that sort
100%.
Of time.
Oh, my gosh. And then it's, like, you can. Yeah. And it's. And I think, like, especially it plays to, because it came out in 2010.
Yeah.
And I think it really plays to that, like you said, you described it as Americana. And I think it really plays to that specific time's fears,
yeah.
right? Because we'd kind of been culturally coming out of that idea of, you know, maybe our parents grew up with where, like, you know, oh, you pick someone and you make it work, right? Ah, you know, you got to, like, and we'd kind of been, like, snapping out of that a mm-hmm. little bit and being like, well, wait, maybe we shouldn't just make anything work
yeah.
because, you know, obviously things are work and take, you know, drive and take passion to make work. But maybe, you know, that doesn't apply to everything,
yeah.
Meemaw. Maybe,
yeah.
you know, maybe if Papa, like, you know, cheated three times in the
yeah.
first 2 years of you guys dating, maybe that's when yeah. you shouldn't make work.
Maybe that's not the fixer-upper you want. You
totally,
know?
Like, yeah. And I think that that's, like, it came out at such an interesting time where, like, that kind of cultural idea of, you know, you pick yourself up by your bootstraps and make the relationship work. Like, no one's going to
yeah.
be I think, like, that image started to shatter a little bit mm-hmm. in that kind of 2000s, early, like, late 2000s. And, like, and I think that this movie perfectly encapsulates that.
Yeah. And I think, like you're saying about, like, it being 2010, like, I think economically, like, situating that in terms of, like,
totally.
Recession and stuff, like, it does feel like there's, like, a cultural disillusionment kind of with this American dream, you know, white picket fence, like, wife, like, married right out of university, because it's just not viable anymore. And, like, I know, like, today this is absolutely, like, there's no way, like, if me, like, with my high school degree could go and, like, support a family with, like, you know, wife, kids, car, like,
no,
that's
yeah.
not happening.
That's the thing, is it's, like, it 100%, I so agree. And it's, like, it's so perfectly encapsulates, yeah, like, that mm-hmm. the breakdown of that, like, of that dream and that, like, promise you were, you know, that kind of that expectation that I think
yeah.
a lot of people grew up on, that, like, it was like, oh, you know, you find the one and then you, like, right, like, adulthood is settling down and,
yeah.
you know, marrying the high school sweetheart.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, you know, I even dated someone in high school who kind of had that
yeah.
mindset. So even when I was in high school, that mindset was still around mm-hmm. to a degree. Like, people were still kind of thinking, like, oh, you know,
yeah.
after high school, that's, like, it. That's
yeah.
now it's real life, and I'm a fully formed adult at 18.
Yeah.
And
I see it sometimes, like, with people, like, who still date from high school. It's like, oh my God, like, why am I getting engagement, like, posts on my feed? Like, we
yeah.
are 20.
I mean, all the power to them, right? It's like,
yeah.
if that works for you, that works for you. But I think it's like this movie is like a real showcase of the underside of that
yeah.
all of us are aware of nowadays, that sometimes, oftentimes, it does not work.
Yeah.
And, you know, you might be that, you know, aunt and uncle that have been married for 60 years and got, you know, her high school sweethearts and just knew that it's who they
yeah.
wanted to be with, right? Or you could end up, you know, like, married, like a crash out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I think, like, yeah, this movie just so bitterly encapsulates that.
Yeah.
And it's so... Oh, it's such a scary movie to watch as
yeah.
someone who was, like, you know, almost kind of, you know, in that culture a little
mm-hmm.
bit, like, you know, seeing that play out, be like, ooh, that hit really close to home.
Yeah.
Really close to home.
Yeah. No, I think, like, it's definitely interesting to see how, like, how little movies honestly, like, kind of depict this, like, the downside of, like, marrying right out of high school. Like,
totally. Yeah.
Like, it's, yeah, and I feel like even speaking to, like, Ryan Gosling and Michelle Williams, like, being able to portray these two characters, like, at such different points in their lives and, like, slip between the two.
Yeah, fantastic,
like, oh my
range
God.
On that. Fantastic, like, grasp of character
yeah.
and grasp of, like, you know, I mean, like, such a massive part, like a huge challenge in acting, obviously, is like that, you know, building your character up, right? Yeah. Like building them up and to have to do that and also play that character at various points in their life and mindsets that their character might have had at certain points. Like I think about, you know, how I perceived the world 4 years ago and I'm like, that's incomprehensible. I don't even know if I could pretend to be like that. And then juxtapose that with, like, you know, these two leads, like, pulling that off so well. And it's super, super impressive.
Oh, yeah. Like, I totally agree. Like, me, like, half a decade ago, it's like, that's a whole different person. Like, if I walked by, like, high school me in the street, no idea.
Oh, yeah.
Wouldn't recognize them. But, like, these two are doing it so well. Like, oh, my God. Like, even, I feel like every role I've seen Michelle Williams in, she's just, like, sad wife. Like, I feel so bad for her. We will get you married to a good man.
Girl, we will get you a good husband. Please, 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 please. We will have you be happy wife at some point.
I promise you. Get her agent on the phone. Please. Cast her in a rom-com.
I know. Every time I see these, like, every time I see, I get, like, such, like, a secondhand, like, empathy to it when I see actors in, like, terrible relationships where I'm like, no, get out of there, queen. Like, get out of there. Like, you know, I'm like, and it's so funny because it's like, you know, they're obviously it's like, but I honestly understand that, like, honestly, even playing a role like that can be really challenging.
Yeah.
Like, on both ends, you know? Like, obviously, you know, not, I think it's substantially harder to be, you know, probably the one who's, probably the one who's maybe being abused in the situation. Yeah. Substantially harder to play that role.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'll even say, like, it's not even easy for the person who's doing the things because they have to do that.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's like, I don't know. Yeah, that movie was shocking, scary, a little, you know. Oh, wow. Yeah, it was a lot. It's a lot to watch.
No, speaking of, like, doing things, like, The Believer, like, that as your shift from Disney Channel, crazy.
Well, I think it's so interesting because initially I was like, oh, my God. But then I thought about it and I was like, no, it's very well documented that when someone's a Disney star, it's like a very and well-known thing of, like, they're very strict about your public image. Like, you cannot take on any roles or do anything in public that could sully, like, your image as a Disney associated star. And, like I know it's like, from my understanding, it's like you can't even be seen, like, can't be seen drinking or anything. Oh, like, you can't, like, you can't, like, you can't be seen in public doing so many things or, like, cast in, like, so many roles. And I know that that's, like, the biggest, like, I can't remember who it was. I wish I remember the actor, but he did an interview where he talked about his transition from, like, you know, Disney star to, like, film.
Yeah.
And they were like, dramatic shift. And they were like, well, when you're absolutely muzzled through your entire development as an actor, like, because you develop so much, like, you're in the Disney, you know, sphere for, like, 8+ years, 8-10 years. And if you're stuck in that sphere and never able to show your acting talent, there's a real feeling apparently from Disney, ex-Disney talent, that they need to, like, show their chops right away.
That makes sense.
Like, they need to show that they're not, like, a Disney star. They're not a Disney crash out, that they got acting chops.
Yeah.
And The Believer really falls into that.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Like, I feel like we've been seeing with, like, current stars, like Zendaya. Like, I feel like she kind of hit that switch really, like, really abrupt.
Yeah,
which
100%.
Which is so interesting.
You could even say, like, I mean, I think the most, like, the classic example is, like, Miley Cyrus.
Yeah.
Even. Like, the immediate switch to, like, you know, and it was so culturally shocking at the time, like Clutching My Pearls, like Disney star is now raunchy and, like, sexualized. And it's like, oh, it's so funny because I can only imagine how bottled up you feel as a creative being forced to sanitize yourself heavily.
To play, like, a 12-year-old while you're, like, entirely, like, 16.
Oh, my God, exactly. Like, yeah.
But, yeah, no, like, I think Ryan Gosling, like, in this movie, like, kills it. Like, especially, like, I cannot believe he's, like, 20. Like, I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but, like, looking at him in, like, this and, like, Blade Runner, like, I know that there's, like, you know, 15 years, 16 years between the two, but he looks like the same to me.
He does. He does low-key look exactly the same, except just like, and we, and I was saying this before we went on air, but it was shocking to me watching Blue Valentine, like, you know, especially The Believer, but even Blue Valentine to an extent, and seeing like Ryan Gosling is absolutely shredded. Like, like, let's just be so for real. The guy is in such good shape. Mm-hmm. But it was so funny because I'm so have such a strong image of him from more recent movies where he's like a big guy. Yeah. Like, he's large.
Yeah.
Large and in charge. And it was so weird seeing him as like skinny abs, like, yeah, you know, like
very lean,
very like almost like emo band heartthrob ass kind of like physique. It was so shocking to see that in The Believer, because I was like, that's not right. Ryan Gosling to me is like big muscle, like stereotypically handsome, you know, very like charming, like, and seeing him especially with the shaved head too, like the shaved head. I mean, The Believer was a fantastic movie. It was so interesting. I went in with no expectations. I went in with like no knowledge of it. I kind of wanted to just be totally shocked. And wow. Talk about, like, I think his strength in these dramatic movies is really his ability to do more with less.
Yeah, like, he's really, like, his performance is very like pulled back, but in this way that where it's like you're still getting a lot of compelling. Like, you understand how he feels towards all these different characters when he doesn't like say it explicitly. He does a lot of like acting with his eyes, like, I think even like the Gosling smolder
I think you see it in this movie, and I think this is like maybe the first recorded instance of a Gosling smolder, because who knows if he was allowed to do that on the Disney channel. But I like, I totally agree. Actually, I've been thinking that this whole time, and I couldn't place it. He acts with his eyes so heavily, and like when you see like The Believer, right, when you see like oh my god, the character's name was Daniel, right?
Yeah.
Daniel, yes. When you see his character Daniel like going through these things, like when they're in the, like, you know, when he's like repairing the Torah, right? When he was repairing, and like all these different scenes, like his slow, you know, growth and coming to terms with his, like, you know, his own beliefs and everything throughout the movie. It's so interesting how, like, I think a different actor would have done the same, you know, physical things, and it would have been boring as hell. Like, I would have been like, say something. I don't know how you're feeling.
Yeah.
But like, he is able to convey so much. Like, I can see that, like, internal. I think that there's like a real issue sometimes, not issue, but I feel like there's this real idea that acting needs to be very internal, and it needs to be like, I need to get my head into the world, the internal world of the character. And what that results in, maybe more amateur actors, is that like you see people that are so in their head that you're like, I'm not getting any of the work that you're putting in to build this character in your head. And it's so nice to see it done properly, like this kind of internal style of dramatic acting where it's like, you can tell what he's thinking. He actually really conveys those emotions without saying anything or without being too obvious with his facial expressions or anything.
Like, there's definitely this, like, recognition that's like, you are, like, playing for a camera. Like, it's going to be like, you're going to be doing, like, 15 takes this thing. You have to be able to keep up that sort of, like, tension while also not, like, overplaying it or underplaying it.
Absolutely.
I think he does a really good job at finding that, like, in-between space where it isn't, like, there's always something to watch with him. Like, he's, something about him on screen is just such a magnetic presence. It's like, I'm like, oh, what's Ryan doing in the corner? Like, I just want to check out whatever, like, background stuff he's doing, because he's always so in it in a way that's like so subtle.
He's great with his with his body language too. I was about to say he's great with his body, and then I was like, I cannot be thirsting on air. But you know, get this guy off the mic. But I like, he's so, I feel like his way that he embodies these characters, and he can like his physicality or in the subtle way that he expresses his physicality is also so, like, again, like in that way that, like, he doesn't need to say anything. He doesn't need to make a face. He doesn't need to, you know, his lack of, he uses negative kind of space really well, in that, like, the lack of action still feels so poignant and intentional.
Yeah.
Whereas I think maybe other actors might, like, you might look at them and you might be like, oh, well, they're just not doing anything. Like, they're just they're just not acting right now.
They're just standing there.
Even in the absence of action, he is acting.
Yeah.
And I think that that is really impressive. I think that shows through in a lot of this movie, and a lot of, because this movie is so internal for Daniel, the main character.
Oh, yeah. Like, it's like, this feels like the sort of movie where if they had a weaker actor, they would have had to do like a voiceover or something. 100%.
Oh my gosh, I was literally thinking exactly that the entire time I was watching the movie. I was like, I can like hear your internal monologue. And I think that in any other instance, there would have been a voiceover.
Absolutely. Like, and I'm so glad they didn't go that way, because like, I think his performance just stands on its own. Like,
yeah,
in such a compelling way. And I think like you were saying about how he works with negative space, like I think that even plays into how he does comedy later on, because a lot of it is like he really understands like when to kind of pull back on a joke and like when to lean into it. Like, his beats are so good. Like, he's very like expressive with his body and almost not afraid to like very like kind of like Charlie Chaplin-esque, just like throw himself around, you know?
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. And I think that like crazy juxtaposition with Charlie Chaplin, considering we just talked about like how he can be so intentionally reserved with his body language. But I think honestly, yeah, like similar principle, right? Where he just like, he knows how to use his body as like a storytelling vehicle in and of itself, and a character, like, and he really just embodies that. Like, I think you can look at, I think the perfect example of this is, I think you can look at like, just as like a easy slop example, like some Marvel movies, some like superhero movies, where there will be characters that like are explicitly just standing there.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how they feel about what's going on. I don't know. Like, I can't tell what they're thinking, you know, when like Bruce Banner's standing in the background of the scene, unless we close up on him and he tells me what he's thinking, I can't tell. Sorry, Mark Ruffalo.
Oh, yeah.
But I just can't tell. You know what I mean?
He's got to hit me with, I'm always angry. I'll be like, he's always angry.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm like, and I think it's such a breath of fresh air to, you know, I'm glad that we've been moving away from that style of movie. I think it stayed its welcome. I think it overstayed its welcome.
Yeah.
I think it had a nice, had a lot of fanfare. Yeah. No one wanted to sit down. Everyone kept standing ovation, and it was like 20 minutes, and it was like, okay, wasn't that good?
Yeah.
And like, I, you know, those movies stand on the merits that they have. They're fun. But I think that, you know, going back to maybe a film like this, where it's like, and an acting presence like this, with that he does so much with so little. And like, I just really think a lot of those scenes of, you know, where you see the inner turmoil of Daniel's character, and it's never just like, they never cut to a voiceover. They never cut to narration. They never, and I think it was a really powerful role. I think it was really, really outstanding. Like debut for him dramatically. Yeah.
Like, I think even really having only the one flashback is also like something that really makes this like stand out. It's like, they're not relying on your typical like narrative tropes that you would see in a movie like this. Like, it is entirely all on Ryan Gosling's shoulders to like depict like 20 years of this sort of like pent up and like misguided rage that like,
absolutely,
from like at his experience with this religion to like the religion itself. So,
yeah,
like, it's so interesting. Like, you can really like see how he's kind of extrapolated this in this way to like have this bigger scale that's like, okay, this isn't something he really like. Like, you were kind of oscillate between, like, does he believe in this? Is he just playing it up? Like, it's very, like, it's also interesting to see, like, how he, like, lashes out at, like, the characters trying
absolutely
to help him. Like, I'm forgetting her name, but, like, the lawyer, like, when she's like, okay, if you do this, like, we can, like.
Yeah, the one working for the DA, right? That's
Yeah,
no, 100%. And I think, like, that, yeah, it's, like, the nuance of the character, like, it's a real character study of a film. And I mean, I believe it's based on a true story as well?
I think so,
I believe it's based on a true story, which, you know, obviously you take that with a grain of salt, because, like, based on a true story could mean, like, I don't know, there was a guy that was named that.
Yeah.
And then we're going to, I don't know, maybe we made up the rest.
Yeah.
But, like, and I haven't looked into the actual history of it, but I am super, like, like, the character study of it was super fascinating. And we're running out of time here, but I did want to say, an interesting thing that we noticed when we were looking at his filmography, we're talking about how good he is an actor and everything. He doesn't have a lot of 5-star out of the park hits.
Yeah.
If really any, he has like a couple. He has like 2 or 3, which is a lot. Don't get me wrong. But for an actor as famous as Ryan Gosling, I think that like he doesn't have like, and he doesn't, he has a few really, really standout performances.
Yeah.
But I think we both agree that his floor for his like performance floor is like a 4-star.
Yeah.
Like, if he's in the movie, he's going to do a really good job.
Oh, yeah. And, like, just by that, like, by him alone, he's going to be, like, dragging that rating up, like, a good, like, 5-star.
Oh, my God,
star.
Yeah. Well, when we were looking at them, we were scrolling on Letterboxd, our cursed, you know, voyage. We were like, most of his movies are pretty solidly four stars, three and a half, like three and a half, four and a half, like that range. Yeah. And then like a couple, like, you know, real standout hits. And I think that that's like, honestly, that's so impressive as an actor to just have such consistently like good movies. Because it's one thing if you have some real stinker roles, right? And, you know, but you have your two like real Oscar moments, like real Oscar bait movies. But like, he's a real solid performer.
Yeah. Like, even to like push him against like the other Canadian Ryan, like it feels like, you know, he's got like Green Lantern, but he's also got Deadpool. But it's like, we perceive him in such different ways.
Yeah. Very dramatic lows and very dramatic highs for Ryan Reynolds. But Ryan Gosling is very like, it's he's steady. He's strong. He's reliable.
Oh, yeah. And I think like it also helps like kind of this image that he's never really done like a Marvel movie. Like his kind of biggest movie was like Barbie or like Blade Runner. It's never like he's never like quote unquote like sold out. Like he is kind of maintained this like almost indie but not quite like between the two.
I actually noticed that as well when I was like, oh yeah, he's never really done like, again, like even Barbie is like you could maybe call that like ever, like so many people did that movie that you'd never call it selling out because it's like, well, it was so massive, right? It's like this was such a massive project. But like I totally agree, he's never really like Harrison Ford, even like, you know, you can look at Harrison Ford, like an actor like who's had really high highs, but then you see him do like the more recent Indiana Jones movie and it's like, bro, just,
he's just so miserable.
Bro, go retire to a farm or something. Yeah. Like, I just, you seem miserable.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you are cooking this paycheck right now. Like, and I even, like, honestly, even his performance kind of in Blade Runner, I was like, the juxtaposition here is, you know, I think obviously there was more plot relevance for him to be there. But, you know, I think, like, comparing to a lot of other actors in the space, you have a lot of high highs and low lows. And he's just so solid. He's so consistent.
Yeah.
Consistently good.
Oh, yeah. Like, if you need, like, a solid 3.5-star movie, call him Ryan Gosling. Like, he's gonna knock that shit out of the park. And he's going to smolder.
Hell yeah. Oh, and he's going to smolder at you while doing it.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the perfect place to end this.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much for coming on, as per usual. We'll see you again next week.
I'll be back, and we'll get sillier next time.
We'll be goofy. We won't accidentally pick a movie that's not a rom-com.
Whoopsies.
Just because Valentine's in the name.
Oh, I really should have looked at the genre tag. That was...
You know what? I saw Ryan Gosling cuddling someone on the poster. I'm like, surely this can't be sad.
You just said rom-com, and I said, all right.
Yeah. I know. I'm using my cinema minor for evil deeds of just saying things. Be like, yeah.
And I just trust you. And I put blind faith in you.
Yeah. we'll see you again next week with more silly, with more goofy. And as per usual, 4 to 5, Real World will be here for our final episode of the summer.
Woo! Yeah.
Thank you guys so much for tuning in and see you then.